Today is Thursday, December 10th, 2020. This is part 6 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Claire Donato, D-O-N-A-T-O. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Claire. How are you today?
I'm fine, Tom. Thank you.
Great. May we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
You may.
Thank you very much. At the end of part 5, you were lining us up to recount how you and Dave Weiss, W-I-S-E, joined together.
W-E-I-S-S.
Thank you. W-E-I-S-S. W-E-I-S-S. Great, thank you. How the two of you were thinking about becoming a tavern owners. Is there anything else about your first stint at Olympic that you would like to bring into this before we head off to be barflies?
Well, I guess I had a couple of creeks named after me and a couple of valleys. I'm sure it didn't make it on any map, but it was local knowledge.
How did that happen?
Well, one of them was up the Elwha Valley, and it was early on in my time up here. And we were coming back from Hayes River Bridge, and we were empty. And one of the ropes, after you've offloaded your loads off your mules, you tie up your ropes onto your pack saddles. And one of them had come undone and was dragging on the trail behind the mule. And this particular mule, Amos, was kind of a scary cat, and he worried about everything. So this mule dragging, this rope dragging behind him was pretty scary. So he was at the end of the string, but he ran into everybody else, which just squished everybody up into me. And I was riding behind a Che who had his own string. I was also riding a young mule. And we were coming down this hill with a creek onto my left that we would be crossing soon. And Jake, who I was riding, started bucking. And so I went flying and rolled down the hill into the creek.
Oh.
So it didn't really have a name until then. So that was the first Clare Creek. And I was fine.
Wait. So Amos runs forward into a string of 3 or 4 mules in front of him?
Yes.
And they all go crowding forward into your mule, and you've got another string in front of you.
Yes. So, like an accordion, we all squished together, and that upset Jake, I was just starting to ride him. And so he started bucking, which I couldn't hang. I might have made 8 seconds, but I doubt it, and went off down the bank into the creek.
So two things are happening here at once. Let's follow you first, and then we'll come back to Jake and what happened to him and the rest of the team there as they were applauding you going down the hill for points. How deep was the creek?
Not very deep.
A foot?
I mean, maybe calf deep.
Okay, about a foot, enough to get completely soaked. Was it raining? Yeah. Was it a sunny day?
It wasn't raining that day, but I was wet.
And were you wearing chaps?
I don't think I was that time.
Okay.
I didn't wear chaps too much up here because of the rain.
Oh, okay.
I did have some chaps, but they were more of a nylon fleece deal because wet leather just isn't pleasant.
Right. I'm just thinking about, everything else being wet as well, and so you get up out of that creek. When you look up the hill, what do you see?
Well, everybody is still scrambling because now I've upset them even further because I've rolled down the bank.
Right.
So Che, who's in the lead, he's trying to stop everybody, but they're all crowding up on him. And two of my mules busted loose of the string.
Ooh.
So when I climb out, I'm trying to catch animals now because Che tried to stop to help me, but now we've lost everybody. So I'm running after them. I have two animals that are loose.
One of them's dragging a rope.
Yeah, and the one behind keeps turning around to look at me like, "Will you stop him?" And I'm trying, Katie. I'm trying. So anyway, we finally was able to stop them and put everything back together, and off we went.
Was this before or after you broke your collarbone?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it might have been before.
Okay. Because I would assume your shoulder wouldn't have liked that kind of off of mule extracurricular activity real well.
No.
So
that was,
when you're standing downslope, you've got a string that's breaking apart. I'm assuming that a mule can make you run a long time.
Yeah, I've chased him for a mile or more before.
Wow.
Yeah, not always something I'm proud of, but you know, things happen.
Yeah, absolutely, they do. But then you have to put things back together, and that might include quite a long jog.
Yeah, my Amos, he was a pretty much of a scaredy cat, and so when things scared him, he wanted to leave.
Wow.
He was definitely a flight, not fight kind of a guy.
Okay.
So I kind of chased after him quite a bit.
Huh. And the
persevered.
Mules that are tied one to another, do you tie them in such a way that when there is a wreck, they kind of can get untied from one or the other?
Yeah, we call it a pigtail. It's just like a quarter-inch manila rope. And if they, actually, one of the mules knew exactly how to pop it. If there's enough force, it'll pop.
Okay.
So then they are loose. So you don't lose the whole string.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So they do it differently in different regions. I think down in Sequoia, they run a rope around their neck and through the britching ring and to the next mule. So there is no breakaway there.
Wow.
But everybody does it differently.
Okay.
I mean, it's like regional.
Sort of. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also assuming that the mules that are more accustomed to people and wrecks and that kind of stuff, when something like this happens, they just stand there. They just stay put.
Yeah, they do. I mean, mules are really good about that generally.
Okay.
Amos was such a scaredy cat that he would want to run. He wanted to leave the situation as quickly as possible. But he was a good boy. He just was scared.
Yeah. No, I'd be scared of, you know, it looks like a snake following me.
This is early on, and he's young, and yeah, there's something following me.
Yeah. That brings up a question. You mentioned when you broke your collarbone, you were on a horse, and a horse stepped in a hole. And I was like, do horses have, maybe mules as well, have a depth perception problems with their eyes? Or, you know, how does it happen that they step in holes?
Well, this particular little horse I never thought was very athletic, but there is a region, I think, from sort of like cats that right in front of them, they can't really see.
Okay.
So they turn their head. And they also, their eyes are like, sort of like glasses, progressive glasses.
Okay.
So they can, you know, lift their head up and down to see. I can't remember. I think it's opposite of what we usually do when we wear glasses.
Okay.
So when there's something alarming, they raise their heads so
right.
they can see out of the bottom of their eyes.
Ah.
So that's their long distance, and then they put their head down to see the top. That's their shorter distance.
Okay.
And from what I understand, I don't know how actually true it is, but I kind of believe it, is that mules can actually see where they're placing their back feet, and horses cannot.
Interesting. Huh.
And that's why they're a little more short-footed on gnarly trails.
Okay.
They can also go longer without water. That's why Grand Canyon uses them.
Hmm. Okay.
Because they can go all day without having any water.
Okay. All right. So that was the first Clare Creek.
Yeah, and the other one was on the North Fork of the Quinault, which is on the west end of the park, and it's a rainforest. And we had stayed at the trailhead. There was a little ranger cabin that we could stay in and carouse. And it had rained all night, and we were supposed to be going up trail. Again, I was with Che, and this was early on, too. And I said, we were going, oh, well, I don't know. So we just geared up in our rain gear, and we're headed up, and we get to the little creek that was before Wild Rose Creek, because Wild Rose was the one I was worried about because it can be a gnarly creek anyway for crossing.
Okay.
And
because it's slippery, or there's a little bridge that's kind of narrow, or why is it a trouble to cross?
A lot of current and a lot of rocks.
And no bridge?
No bridge.
Oh, wow.
So there's a log bridge for hikers.
Okay.
There was. But, so we were going to go check it out and decide at that point whether we were headed up trail or not.
Okay.
And we get to that, to the little creek before there, and it was going pretty good. And so Jay says, well, let's just tie the mules up here and we'll cross it and walk up and see what Wild Rose looks like.
Okay.
And I said, okay. So we're crossing it. He was in front of me. We're crossing it, and I slip and head down the creek, and I grab onto a rock, and I'm just hanging there. I'm in full rain gear and everything, and so I'm not moving.
Wow.
I'm just hanging on, and finally I see a hand in front of my face, and I latched onto his hand, and he pulled me out of there. And, you know, I got the water out of my boots and all that, and so he said, well, you're on the side now. Let's go check out Wild Rose. we walked up, and it was way high and way, you know, just way boiling. And it was like, nope, we're not crossing that. So
okay.
We didn't even. So now I got to get back across this little creek. And so he got like a little log, you know, small, big stick, small log.
Mm-hmm.
That we both held on to as we crossed, and I was able to make it. But, yeah, so that was the second Clare Creek.
And then you've got to get.
The trooper now probably doesn't know anything about it.
Right. Right, they got their own places after their own wrecks to
right.
name. Yeah, yeah. So besides terribly embarrassing, I suppose, you didn't get hurt, and you just have to make it
yep.
through the rest of the day totally soaked to
yep.
get back into some dry clothes.
Yeah, well, we just headed back to the barn, so to speak, and, yeah, I was
okay.
able to dry off.
At least that day, the mules got a chance to just hang out, and
yeah.
They didn't have to jump up and down. And
at least that wasn't a mule wreck. It was just me.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get valleys named after you?
Valleys?
Yeah, did you, creeks and valleys?
No, just the creeks.
Just the creeks, okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. I got confused there.
There's a rock named after me too, I guess.
Is that during this same time period?
Much later.
After the tavern or before the tavern?
I think after the tavern.
Okay, well maybe...
There was, on the Duckabush, there's like a gnarly, you gotta climb up, kind of climb up this rock, it's real exposed.
Wait.
It's not real long.
Where is this? On the Duck and Bush? No, what?
Duckabush. Duckabush.
What's that?
It's a river.
Oh, okay.
River. It's one of the... Yeah, there's lots of names. There's Dosey Wallops, there's the Duckabush, there's Staircase, there's the Ho, there's the Quinault.
Okay.
The Queets. But, yeah, so it's always been a gnarly little place. And a lot of times I would stop and, well, I guess it was after this that I did that, disconnect everybody and just let them pick their own way across. I had come up, and I had little Janice, and I had Tia tied to her, and Tia was a big girl, and Janice was a little girl, and Tia was kind of lazy, and so she was dragging on Janice, and Janice being the kind of girl she was trying really, really hard to pull Tia up, and Janice's pigtail popped. And then she lost all of her leverage, and of course she had, it was always my tool mule. Anyway, she started to go over, and she just sort of pitch-pulled over onto the beach of the river below. So I had to take them off the rock, because I can't lose anybody else, so took everybody off the rock.
Claire, hang on. I'm confused. So you're trying to cross this Duckabush River.
No, I'm just on the side of the river.
You're on the side of the river, and Janice is pulling Tia, and the rope between Janice and Tia lets go?
Well, the rope that Janice is tied to pops. So it between her and Tia eventually pops too, and she falls off. But, you know, Tia's kind of a lard. But so she wasn't going anywhere.
So when the rope Janice is tied forward to your mule.
To a mule right behind me.
Okay, so there's a string of four there.
Yeah, there's probably five.
Okay,
yeah.
And so this is position three and position four for Janice and Tia, and when the rope from mule two to Janice pops. What happens to Janice? She started to go over. I'm confused.
She has nothing holding her head anymore that was keeping her taut between the mule in front of her and behind her.
Okay.
So it just all of a sudden released her, and so her head, so she just fell backwards, basically.
Okay.
And she basically pitch-pulled off the rock. I mean, usually the, like, roll that she went over backwards, and I'll never forget her little face.
Like head, like she fell back on her butt and then rolled over onto her back.
Yeah, she pitch-pulled over, head over tea kettle.
Okay. And Tia's right behind her.
Yeah, but that rope has popped, and Tia's not going anywhere. But I had to get everybody off of the rocks so I could... I didn't have any place to tie, so I could tie them up so I could go down and get Janice.
And she's rolled down a hill then?
Yeah, she's down on the down by the river itself, because we're climbing up above it. So I went down and got her, and I took all of her load off and her tools and checked her out. And,
was she okay?
She was okay.
Okay.
And so I said, I'm sorry, girlfriend, but we got to pack you back up. So I put her load back on her, and we came up, and I just left her at the end. I didn't tie her back into the string. She just followed along behind us.
Okay.
And we deposited everything. And then when I came back to the rock, I stopped and untied everybody, except for, you know, who I'm riding, and I was leading one.
Okay.
And then everybody picked their way over the rock to get back. And then I would, after everybody made it across, I stopped and tied everybody back in, except for Janice. I just let Janice be. And, yeah, when we get to the trailhead, I was spending the night there, and she was starting to shake. I think she was a little shockish anyway. I kind of put blankets on her and the canvas mani and tried to warm her up, and she was fine in the morning.
Good.
But.
So.
That rock became Claire's rock. Yeah.
The things the tourists never know.
Right.
Yeah, only the trail crew knows where Claire's rocks are. Yeah. Oh boy. I'm learning about mules. It sounds like they can be sociable enough so that if they have their head, they have a free rein, they'll stick around. They'll travel together.
And actually that's why a lot of the packers like to ride horses and have mules as their packs, because mules love horses. And
oh.
So if you have your horse staked down, you usually have your mules with
okay.
you. So if you're overnighting, they might stake out their horse and turn the mules loose, because they won't leave the horse.
Wow. Okay.
But I always liked riding a mule better than a horse, just because I thought they were better on the trail.
Okay. Because they're a little stockier or a little more sure-footed?
A little more sure-footed.
Okay. All right. So were you the only one that was having wrecks out there?
Oh, no.
I didn't think so.
Wrecks are a common occurrence, really. So,
like once a month, once every 6 months?
I don't know. It depends. You know, I would have, bees were a big wreck maker.
Bees. How?
You'd never think of a little tiny critter sending a 1,000-pound animal into hysterics.
Wow.
But, yeah, so bee season was always interesting.
Huh.
But.
Wow.
I mean, I could tell you all sorts of stories, I guess.
Well, tell me one more.
Well, okay, so I was coming down from Low Divide, which is up in the high country, and there is a particular bridge, glacier bridge, it's pretty exposed, so I always would stop before I crossed it to make sure all my loads were good.
Okay.
And I had passed a couple of hikers, and they go, "Oh, that looks like a great job." And I said, "Yeah, pretty good job." So I get down and I stop. There was a load I wanted to adjust before I crossed the bridge, and I was doing that. And here's my Katie Mae again, and she, I tied her up, and I tied her on top of a ground nest of bees.
Ooh.
So here come the bees, and they're stinging her, and everybody's kicking and carrying on, and I'm losing loads, and I have to take everybody and move them out of the bee range and then go get my loads and put them back in, and here come these guys again. And I said, "Well, think it's a great job now?" But so anyway, I made it. I finally got everything back together, and we went on. And
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is it the same with a load? If a load starts getting into trouble, does it have kind of breakaway, or how does that, or do you have to actually undo that strap?
I just try and I watch, you know, they rock, and you can, particularly when you're going downhill, you can watch them rock, and if they're rocking evenly, then it's pretty well balanced. If it starts rocking heavier to one side, then you know you're going to have to make an adjustment.
Okay.
So you always put the heavier side higher than the lighter side.
Okay.
So you just raise them or lower them to make it balanced.
Hmm. All right.
Because I didn't always have a scale with me, so I would just basically try and pick things up that weighed the same and load the two boxes
and
at
match,
the same time.
Match them, yeah. Yeah. Well, after a bunch of dunking in creeks and fighting bees, I can appreciate why you might want to run a tavern.
Well, I just started getting to be lackluster, I guess. And
okay.
I had asked Richard if I could help him with the NOVA grants, because he was real good at getting funding, and he was doing these NOVA grants for different projects. And so I was starting to learn how to write grants and do that. But then when David Weiss approached me, I said, oh, this might be a good out. So
let's stop a minute at the grants. NOVA, is that N-O-V as in Victor, A as in Apple?
Yes.
And what are they?
It's an off-road vehicle thing.
Oh.
Association.
Okay.
I don't know what the N is. Off-road vehicle?
National
Off-Road Vehicle Association.
Okay.
Something like that.
NORVA. N-O-R-V-A. Off-road vehicle. No, just NOVA. Okay.
NOVA, yeah.
Okay.
And so they gave out a bunch of money for different projects, and you just had to make a presentation to them.
Okay.
Which Richard did pretty much every year.
Okay.
But so he was going to let me help on a project that was up the hoe, but I ended up buying a tavern before I finished.
Okay.
Doing that.
So what attracted you to running a tavern?
I don't know. it was a tavern that I had always gone to. It was a nice little community spot. I knew most all the people. Having my own business kind of appealed to me at the time.
Okay.
I don't know. We thought we could make it work. It was for sale, and we thought we could make it better. It was just beer and wine at the time. But, yeah, we just thought we'd give it a go.
And this is in what little town?
Port Angeles. It's just west of Port Angeles.
And where's the nearest, like, liquor store where you can go wholesale to buy?
It would be in downtown Port Angeles.
Okay, so not far away.
Yeah, about 5 miles away.
Okay. And were you thinking about, well, maybe we should put some hard liquor in there and some food in there, or what?
Well, we were going to have to do hard liquor if we didn't sell out. We sold it at the end of 2000. But we did have food. I was doing the food. We didn't have a real nice kitchen. We had a pizza oven and a toaster oven and a microwave and a sink and a nice cooler. So we just did sandwiches and soups and pizza and, salads, potato salad, pasta salad, and that sort of stuff.
Okay. And how big a place are we talking about?
No, it wasn't big. I don't know, 1,400 square feet or so.
So it might be able to seat 30 people max, maybe?
No, it seems like we, what was our thing? It was like 70 people or was maximum.
Wow.
You know, that's not all sitting.
Right, okay.
But because we started bringing in music, but
Ah.
we had a nice deck outside. I mean, out back that looked over the straits, Strait of Juan de Fuca,
Okay.
that had a nice water view.
Wow.
And yeah, and so David started getting in these bands from Seattle, blues bands, and who were quite good.
Wow.
And yeah, we started getting quite the music scene going on weekends.
Nice.
And people were really enjoying it, but then I would hear that, you know, I'd come out there if it wasn't so dang smoky. And so I said, David, we got to stop the smoking, which I had wanted to do anyway, because I didn't smoke and I hated, you know, it had a low ceiling in the one part. We had a pool table and dartboards and that sort of stuff. And I said, we got to stop the smoking. And he goes, well, I don't want to do that full time, because we had our morning clientele, or, you know, after early afternoon clientele. We didn't open till 11. Was all smokers. And I said, okay, well, we have music at 9, so how about music nights? We stop the smoking at 6. It was like we had a deck, people could take their beer and smoke out there. So we were, I think, the first ones that started with the non-smoking before it became mandatory.
I was going to say that must have gone over like a kind of lead balloon, I would think.
Well, it increased our band clientele,
Oh,
because
okay.
they didn't want, you know, we had, it was a whole nother clientele
Huh.
than, say, our locals that were in there early afternoon.
Ah, okay.
So we let our locals smoke until 6, and then it's like, no, now you can just smoke out on the deck, which, you know, you could bring your beer too. It wasn't like, I didn't see it as a hardship. So,
Okay.
so yeah, we were doing a pretty good business that way with the bands.
Okay. And was that like a summertime band thing? And in the winter, you know, I'm assuming it rains there at Port Angeles.
Yeah, no, it, unless the roads were too icy or snowy for, I mean, one year. I mean, we did it year round, but one year,
Wow.
I think it, we had like 3 foot of snow or something. We couldn't. It was going to be for New Year's Eve. We had had a big to-do planned, and yeah, nobody was going anywhere. I mean, it was like, it was funny because we were open, but you know, hardly anybody could get out. So it was like the following Thursday. I don't know why I remember Thursday, but everybody was starting to get out, and it was like that was our New Year's Eve. But we didn't have the band, but yeah, I had to get somebody to grade the parking lot, and
Wow.
I couldn't get out of my place. I bought my place in 1990, and I have a like a quarter mile long driveway. So I couldn't get out, and I had to, I walked up, and I was to the highway to hitchhike into to work. So that was before hitchhiking get too scary, I guess. That's, you know, in the, that was like 90, end of 96, 97.
Okay. And I'm assuming that when you bought the tavern, you bought the building and the land too?
Just the business.
Oh, so somebody else had to.
Yeah, we had, so that was part of the overhead. There was actually a lot of overhead on that whole deal.
Like
And
what?
the state, and then you have the B&O taxes from Washington State, and I always said the state made more money on my business than I
Yeah,
do.
huh.
But
So is that beer and alcohol tax?
yeah, business and occupation tax is what it's called, but yeah,
Oh.
any retail, and we had to pay it every month. So it was, that was a pain.
Hmm.
And that was all new too for me. I mean, so another new learning experience. And then it was like, let's see, I don't know, it was 98, maybe 99. The blood alcohol level, they lowered it. So then people got scared to come out.
Oh.
But they, you know, they hardened up to it and started coming out again. But and then there was another tavern that opened up down the road. So we started kind of losing out on business, and Dave and I started to have to lay a couple of people off and start bartending ourselves.
Ooh.
So that became old.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided we were either going to have to add hard liquor or sell. So we decided to put it up for sale. And luckily, it sold not too long after that. But
wow. Okay.
So by the end of December 2000, we had sold it. And I didn't know what I was going to do now. Like, okay, what do I do now? I was thinking that I would do drop camps. You know, I have my own animals and just take hikers or fishermen or whoever wanted to go into the park.
Had you been, while you were doing the tavern work, which sounds like it ran for almost 10 years, is that right?
No, from 96 to 2000.
96 to 2000. Okay, thank you. Were you staying abreast of what was happening in the park with regards to packing?
Yeah, pretty much. And in the meantime, I was able to take my mule Jake from the park home. I don't know how Richard organized that, but he did, bless his heart. And so I had Jake, and then I had a friend's horse that was staying with me, and then I bought another mule in 97, and I picked up another horse who was going to end up going to slaughter, and so I just went and got him. And
okay.
So I was sort of acquiring these animals, and I was thinking I could do a drop camp. I knew that Richard had left at some point in there. And Larry Lack had become acting trails foreman. So then the packer I had been packing with, his name's Mo. Well, Mo is his nickname, Lester Moses. He was sort of doing most everything by himself, and Larry was trying to do both, pack and do the acting trails foreman.
Oh, that's hard.
And I know that they had some older animals, and so I knew they were kind of having a rough time. And so I went to Larry after we sold, and I said, well, how about for the summer of 2001, I come in and help you, and I'll use my animals to help too, but I just work. I just work intermittently. I just want to do the trips. I don't want to do the barn time. I don't want to shoe. I just want to come in. I'll take care of the trucks and the animals, you know, in and out of the trips, and I'll do the trips. So he said, it sounds good to me. And so so I got back on as a seasonal and just worked intermittently and basically had the summer off except for, you know, a trip basically once a week for anywhere from 1 to 3 days. And so that worked out nicely for both of us.
Okay.
And then the next year...
What did you do that winter?
What did I do that winter? I don't know. Probably, see, one of the bartenders that we had was also a good friend of mine, Debbie White.
Okay.
And she had basically been bartending at that tavern. over and on and off for years. But anyway, we had been riding buddies together, so we rode a lot together on off times.
Okay.
And so I don't know if I went anywhere that way. I mean, I might have done. The bad thing about being partners with David was we weren't being on river trips together either. You know, one of us needed to be at the tavern.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's a full-time job.
I don't know how sole proprietors do it, because it was like, if I didn't have a partner, so I could have actual time off.
Right.
But, so, my 2002, I can't remember, there was another guy before they gave Larry the position of trails foreman. I can't remember his name, but he didn't last long. And it seems like he was gone so much that Larry was still doing the acting. And I don't know why they brought somebody else in when they should have just given it to Larry anyway.
Mm, yeah.
But they finally gave him the position of trails foreman. And so they were going to need another packer. So there's my job, just right there waiting for me when I needed a job. So they made me permanent in 2002 again.
Okay.
So.
Did you kind of negotiate that out, not doing shoes, not doing barn work? Or?
No, once I got back into it, it was just that time I wanted most of the summer off.
Okay.
So when they got back, I was on full duty with,
All right.
10-hour days, shoeing and whatever else.
Uh-huh.
But I said, I want to go out when the mules go to pasture. I want to be done. So I had a 7-month season. That's what I negotiated. I said, I'll come back as permanent, but I'm just working when the mules are working.
So that was permanent but subject to furlough? Is that what that is? Or?
Yeah. Yep. So I could be on unemployment every winter and play.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
So hard work in the summer again, packing and shoeing and doing trail work. Or were you doing trail work? Were you supplying the trail work people?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't do too much trail work anymore. I just supplies.
Okay.
And then in 2004, in February, I went to Belize and married my husband.
Oh, wow.
after 14 years of living together. So didn't want to rush into anything, I guess.
Yeah.
So we got married then and came back and started building our house. When I bought this property in 1990, it had a trailer house. It's 5 acres and a trailer house.
Okay.
And so we built our house ourselves. It took 3 years, but.
Wow.
Yeah. But we got it done eventually.
Who did you end up marrying?
Mike Hammel, Hammel. But his nickname is Flo, Flo. That's what I call him.
Where did you meet Flo?
At the bar.
Okay.
When he's born and raised here, but when I moved here, he was on an extensive road trip going around the country, Key West and Montana, and so.
What was he doing when you met him?
He was bartending.
Okay.
Bartending at the tavern that I later bought, and then and also at another place in the little town of Joyce.
So did he help? Did he help with that when you bought the tavern?
Yeah, he would bartend for band nights, but at that point he was building fiberglass kayaks.
Oh.
And tours with taking people out on kayaks.
Okay.
But, yeah, he would bartend for the bands. Help bartend.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't ask you, what was the name of the bar? The tavern?
The Junction Tavern. Because it sat at the junction of 101 and Highway 112, which are the only two highways on the peninsula.
Okay. And did it have a nickname?
The Junction.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I had my 40th birthday there. It was a knockdown, drag-out affair, too. It was a lot of fun.
Fun.
But.
So when you went back to work, what did Flo do for the park when you went back to permanent?
He was still working. Well, no, when we came back from Belize, he wanted to work for a golf course.
Okay.
So he kept bugging all the golf courses in town, and he finally got on with Peninsula Golf Course, and then he eventually became superintendent of greens there. So he got what he wanted. But when I had the tavern, he was building kayaks.
Okay.
Adventures Through Kayaking was what they started, and now some friends of ours bought that, and they're doing trips.
Are those like sea kayak kind of things?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
So back working for Olympic now, and Larry is your boss.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of projects were you working on?
Just basically the same old thing. I mean, packing in. We always had the SCA crew every summer. I know 1 year we had just gotten some new mules, and we were packing them in, and my friend Chris Williams was packing with me at that point. And I don't know what happened. I thought that something fell out of the out of the tree and hit me in the head. It was like all of a sudden I just knew there was a thud. And then the little mule I was riding, Ellie, she started bucking. And I think I might have blacked out for a second or two, but when I came to, I'm trying to control her to stop the bucking. I guess I'm going to tell you another wreck story.
Okay.
And she lost me. I fell off, and so we had all these new mules. I had a string of five. Chris had a string of five. And they're all just looking at me on the ground, and I see that Socks was the one I was leading, and I was trying to get his lead rope before they all ran off, but I wasn't able to quite grab it, and they all ran off. And Chris was able to keep his string, so he tied his string up, and I'm going, oh crap, what do we do now? Because we're like 4 miles in for a 22-mile trip. Okay. And of course, because they were new, they didn't know where they were. It's the first time they'd been up the whole valley.
Mm.
So they ended up coming back to us.
Oh, wow.
And so we were able to fix their loads and get them all set, and I'd gotten hit in the head.
With what?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, like I said, I thought something fell out of the sky and hit me like a branch or a limb or something.
Yeah, like a log, like something out of a tree, sure. Hmm.
Yeah, but you know, I didn't see any evidence of that on the ground, and so it might have been Ellie's head. I still have a dent in my head from that, But anyway, so it got to be a big lump that I had to, we had to carry on. I mean, we still had all this gear, so that we were dropping off. So we dropped off the gear and came back out. Like, you know, I had 18 more miles to go. I wish I could have just gotten on and ridden to the couch, but but I made it. And then by that time, my lump was starting to move down my face.
Ooh.
It was weird.
Okay.
So I ended up having 2 black eyes, and yeah, it was my concussion.
How did your shoulder handle that one?
The shoulder was the least of my concern.
Mm, okay. All right.
And then 2011 is when I broke my leg.
What happened there?
Well, we were up to Quinault. There had been a big old cedar tree that came down across the trail, which became, you know, a nice mine for cedar shakes, because we had a guy that was rehabbing all the backcountry shelters, and they tried to do it, you know, historically. And so anytime we could get cedar shakes was a good time. So they were taking, splitting up shake bolts, and we were going in to pack them all out. And the first week we did, we packed out like 121 of them, I think. And
wow,
it rained the whole time. And then the second week, it was the first day, the first mule, the first load, I was going up to undo her ropes. It was Chris and I, and then 2 trail crew people who were kind of weighing out the bolt and putting them alongside the trail so we could just bring the mule in. And then we had the shake bolts that were already weighed out, and we could just put them on the limber bunks or tie them on, however we were packing it.
Uh-huh.
We each had a string of 5. And there's shake bolts laying all over the place. We had Ruthie, the mule, ready to get her load, and I was walking up to go on the other side of her to undo her ropes and get her ready for her load. And I started to stumble. I've always kind of been a stumble bum. That's why I always like to ride.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to stumble, and I had a feeling I was going down. I put my arm out because I was kind of going to use her to maybe keep me up. But she was a fairly young mule, and that scared her. So she was trying to get away from me. And in doing so, her foot got on top of one of those shake bolts and slipped off and just nailed my leg. And I dropped. And my foot actually was facing towards me.
Oh.
My brain just went, that's not right. And I just reacted and moved it back in where it should be.
Okay.
Position.
Yep.
And I heard everybody going, oh my God, oh my God. And I went, Chris, I'm broken. Because I just knew it. I knew it immediately.
Hmm.
And, one of the trail crews said, where's the radio? And I went, yep, start the radio show. And so we had just finished a refresher for wilderness first responders.
That's handy.
Yeah. And so so they were going to split me up. But I was starting to, like, shake. They were giving me their clothes and it was lucky that it wasn't raining that day. It was sunny.
Mm.
And not only did I have those 3 other people there, but there was a whole crew up trail, clearing trail.
Huh.
So there was about 6 people up there. And I was getting cold or shaking or shock or whatever, and I asked Chris to take off a couple of saddle blankets from one of the mules to put on me. And that warmed me up. That stopped the shaking. And they got on the radio, and they splinted me up, which was very painful. And but they did a good job. And they brought a wheeled litter in and wheeled me out of there.
How far?
It was only 2 miles. That was the other lucky thing.
Okay.
But, yeah, so there was an ambulance waiting. It was just basic life support. And I had to go, like, I don't know, like 20 miles or so on a dirt road. And that actually, that was a worse ride than the litter was.
I bet. Huh.
But they were going to take me to Aberdeen instead of Port Angeles. And I said, I want to go to Port Angeles. And they said, well, we're closer to Aberdeen. So they offloaded me at a little town to a advanced life support. And then they were able to give me some drugs. But they x-rayed me there. Anyway, I spent the night there. And Larry and the Quinault Ranger arranged to get me back home. So I got back home the second night, and then the next day I had an appointment with a ortho guy in town. In Port Angeles.
Port Angeles.
So I finally get in to see him, and he x-rays me and goes, you horsewomen are tough. And I'm going, what's happening? And he goes, well, basically, your foot's not connected to your knee. So I had four breaks, one of them being a spiral.
Wow.
And so he admitted me to the hospital, and I had surgery the next morning.
Okay.
And they put in a rod.
Right.
And a plate and screws for my spiral break. But it was supposed to be like a 3-hour surgery, and it ended up being like 6.
Whoa.
And so I guess I had some of my best Neil Skinner vernacular coming out of that anesthesia. It felt like I'd been drugged behind a truck. But so I was out of work for the rest of that year, 2011, and then I had my father die in July, and then my mother followed him in October. But it was quite the year for me.
Yeah.
They eventually put me on some light duty, doing some computer work once I was able to walk.
Did your folks ever, did they get a chance to tell you how proud they were about what you'd done with your life?
Yeah, my father and I kind of lost a little contact, but no, Mom was always proud. She didn't like it when I quit, my government job the first go around.
Right.
But she was happy when I went back to it.
Okay.
And yeah, but so it was tough, and I had been trying to get back there every couple of years to see them. But so then I was able to come back to full duty the following year, which was 2012. And so I made a full season working, my full job. And I did lose a little confidence. I got a little shaky about being by myself, because luckily I was with people. But if I had a radio and I had a first aid kit, but they were on my mule and I wasn't going to be able to get to it. But I had my friend Debbie White, who used to bartend at the tavern, volunteer. And so she went with me on most trips. So I always had somebody with me.
Cool.
And after that, I went, well, I'm getting to be, getting to my early retirement age. And I think I'm going to take it. So I can still do stuff before something else happens to me.
Right.
So I officially retired in February of 2013.
How old were you at the time?
How old was I? 56?
Okay.
Yeah, that was as early as I could retire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I went for it.
All right. And was there a little party there? Did Richard get a chance to come over?
Richard didn't come over, but they did do a surprise party for me at the Junction Tavern.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because I came in and my husband Flo's going, is distracting me, and I'm going, what are you doing? And so we get, he goes, we're going to stop at the tavern, and I didn't really want to, and I said, man, it is packed. I don't know about this. And I'm going, wait, that's so-and-so, park service. I'm seeing a lot of park service people here.
You knew something was up.
Yeah, so anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I started playing for a living.
All right. And what have you been doing in the last 7 years?
Well, right after I retired, I bought a mule.
Okay.
It was going to be my project. And then I started doing some hiking. A bunch of girls and I got together and would hike every Thursday. We called ourselves the Olympic Mountain Beavers.
Nice.
And the mule I bought, Russell, he ended up getting a chronic disease that I just had to put him down this year. But in March of 2015, we went on a private Grand Canyon trip.
Wow.
With Dave King and his wife, Abby. And that was a lot of fun. My friend Sarah Woodard and I did all the cooking and the vacuum packing, and we had and froze it, and yeah, we did all the cooking for that.
Wow. Oh, you did that ahead of time, froze it, and then took it on the trip.
Yep.
Okay.
And we had a big tote of ice that we kept all the meals in until we got to the river, and then we had gotten with one of the commercial companies their big coolers that they freeze a bunch of ice water on the bottom.
Right.
And so we had two of those, and we labeled everything, and we taped one of them up, said nobody's getting into this cooler until we say.
Right. Good.
So yeah, we did pretty good with that. And we were on the river for 24 days. We didn't pull out at Diamond. We pulled out at
nice.
Pierce Ferry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
So it was a great trip.
Excellent.
And then shortly after that, something went awry with my leg, and it's kind of given me problems ever since.
Oh, my gosh.
So nobody knows what's wrong. They tell me I'm structurally sound, but something's wrong. Anyway, I've done physical therapy.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. But I haven't been riding. My older mule is pretty arthritic. I'm going to let him be retired.
Okay.
With my leg, I'm not all that confident anyway. So
right.
I've just been crabbing and clamming and fishing and kayaking, golfing.
Nice.
So,
okay.
That sort of stuff.
Very cool. Well, not so cool about your leg, but.
No, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking back now, over this amazing journey with large animals, if you could have done something different, what would you have done?
I don't know. I'm pretty much happy with my life. I would like it if my leg hadn't gotten broken.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it was nobody's fault. It was just sort of a freak accident.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Well, good.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm pretty happy with everything. You know, after the tavern and when I went back, I had a kind of a renewed perspective. So I was a lot happier. And then, you know, it started to be a lot more people on the trail crew, younger crew. We had more animals. So.
So it sounded like it was busy.
Yeah, busy.
Yeah, good. Well, Claire, maybe we should put a period at the end of this interview and call it good. What do you think?
Yep, that's pretty much my life.
Okay, all right. Well, I want to thank you so very, very much for participating in this oral history series. And with that, this will conclude part 6, oral history interview with Claire Donato. Today's Thursday, December 10th, 2020. My name is Tom Martin, and Claire, thank you so very much.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thank you.